Okay, so we're here at this alternative G20 summit because the G20 is meeting across the road in a couple of days' time. And I guess everyone who's here thinks that they're really not the right forum to be discussing global issues and global problems, right? That there's representatives from 19 countries plus the EU making decisions that will affect the entire world. And we look back at the decisions that they're making, and we see that it's decisions that support capitalism and corporate greed and the benefits for the few and not for the many. And we don't like those decisions. And most of the discussions that are taking place sort of here and throughout the summit are about what's wrong. Right? What's wrong with the G20? What's wrong with global capitalism? It's so terrible. And I think what we want to come to suggest is that we agree with the criticisms of what's wrong, but what's the alternative? What's a way forward? What's a different way that the world could be organized that would be more just? And whilst there's one line of thought that says actually globalization is bad, we want deglobalization. Let's go back to how we were in the 1960s, or let's even go right back to how we were and live in small communities and all be self-sufficient and alternative and so forth. I personally don't believe these are realistic solutions. I don't think we can go backwards. But I think the solution is how do we improve globalization? How do we have a different kind of globalization? And how do we have a globalization that's based on justice and based on democracy, that's based on everybody having a voice and being able to make decisions about how our global world is being run? So we do need, I believe, some kind of global coordination, because more than ever before, we have global problems. Climate is the obvious example, right? Problems of climate don't stop at borders. We all need to come together to somehow work out solutions to climate change. But also, the economy is global. Therefore, issues of poverty and inequality are global issues. Epidemics. There's many, many issues. So we do need to think about some kind of global coordination. But we believe that the fundamental thing is that it should be democratic, that everybody should be involved in this. So there are many different ways that we could think about imagining global democracy. What might it look like? That sounds like such a crazy idea. And I think there are many different formats that it could take. And certainly neither of our organizations come with saying it has to be this format or that format, right? We sort of support the notion of global democracy and then are open to discussions about exactly how that might look. But to start the ball rolling, to start us thinking about it, I think we can look at some of the ways that we bring about justice at a country level, at a state level, especially here in Europe. And just imagine, well, what would happen if we put those kinds of structures at a global level? Right? Like, how do we deal with inequality and poverty within any of our countries? And we have lots of nice Scandinavian countries who do it better than anybody else. But throughout Europe, and even in North America, to a lesser extent, we have systems of social welfare, we have taxation, we have redistribution, we have a welfare state, right? That's how we deal with some of these issues at a state level. What would happen if we put this up to a global level, right? What would happen if we had global political parties and global elections and, for example, a global welfare state? Now, there's a number of you that are working in international development and also are anthropologists. And by the way, I'm an anthropologist and I also work in international development. And I come to this after doing that for 20 years and thinking, okay, how does international development work at the moment? We take a minute budget, which is the official development assistance, ODA budget, right? Which despite all the countries promising to give 0.7% of GDP, is nowhere near. Right, like, well, maybe a few Scandinavian countries, but it's about 0.3% is what's given. So a tiny little amount of money is given with all sorts of strings, and is often channeled into all sorts of stupid projects that maybe help 100 people, 1,000 people, maybe 2,000 people. Maybe a great project helps 5,000 people. Right? In a country like Ethiopia, where I do a lot of work, it's 80 million people. So helping 5,000 people is really not such a big deal. If we had some kind of system of global taxation and redistribution, and if we started thinking about that, that would provide welfare services, free education, health, and so forth, it's a radical idea, but it's also a really simple idea, right? And it's not that this is the only way that a global democracy could function, but once we start thinking in terms of global democracy, it opens our minds to think about options like this. With climate, with a global democratic system, we could have a kind of a ministry of environment that could make laws and that could be enforced, rather than these intergovernmental agreements that no one sticks to, and if you want to pull out like Trump, you just pull out. And meanwhile, our climate is filling up with carbon dioxide and getting hotter, and until it's really too awful, nothing gets done. So we think that some form of global democracy is actually the only way to bring about global justice. And whilst this might sound far-fetched, if we look into the history of Europe, okay, if we go back into to particular European countries, in about the early 1800s, we had a system where we had parliaments and governments, but about 2% of the population were eligible to vote, right? Just if you, first of all, you had to be a man, and you had to own enough property and wealth to be eligible to vote, right? And the vast majority of the masses were peasant farmers who had no rights, no ability to vote. 150 years later, we have universal suffrage in pretty much every European country. Now that's a long 150 years, but that's, if you'd spoken to people in 1800 and said, this is what the future looks like, they'd say, you're mad, hey, it's crazy. Look, only those barons and nobles and whatever, they've got the vote. How can we all get the vote? And it happened. And I would say that when we look at it on the global scale, it's very similar today to the European country in the 1800s, right? The G20 is a little minority. It doesn't even represent really the 20 countries. It represents the people of the governments of those countries. A tiny little minority are making the decisions, and the vast masses don't have a say. Okay? And whilst it seems quite hard to imagine how we would change that, it happened at the state level. It might be something that takes 50 years, 100 years, 150 years. Things move faster these days, right? It's not a short-term goal, but it's a medium to long-term goal. And unless we start thinking about it and talking about it and mobilizing towards it, it just recedes into the distance, right? How did democracy happen at the European level? Okay. It happened from above and from below, right? There were differences in the opinions and what the elites wanted that led to certain factions within the elites actually thinking that increasing democracy and increasing voting would be a good thing. But it also happened because there was this new ideology of socialism, communism, Karl Marx's ideas, of labor unifying, right? Of labor moves pushing, wanting to vote, wanting to have the right to vote, and wanting a more just and fair society, and doing demonstrations and strikes and so on and so on and so on. Okay? And these factors together, eventually led to this huge change, right? And with democracy came redistribution, came welfare state, came free education for everybody, healthcare for everybody, came to not a perfect system, but a way, way, way better system than what there was before. And likewise, a global democracy would not be a utopia, right? It wouldn't be that suddenly we'd all sit around, hug each other, and we'd all be completely equal and everything would be nirvana, right? There'd be all sorts of problems, but it'd be way better than it is now, because at least everybody would have a say in making these policies. And imagine if all the poor people, all of those in the global south are having a say in the policies that are being made at the global level. Pretty different policies would be decided rather than the policies that we have now. And I think another reason that it's really important to think about this is to think what the alternative is, right? Because where are we going, right? If we don't, the world is getting more and more integrated, right? We have global governance, we have a global economy. We're going in a direction of more integration. So if we don't end up with our political organization being democratic, where are we going? What's it going to look like? There's an economist at the University of Harvard called Danny Roderick. I don't know if any of you have come across him, but he's thought about these issues quite a lot, and he's kind of interesting. And he sets it out and says, basically, if the economy gets more and more integrated, right, if that's the direction that we're going, which for the time being looks like where we're going, there's basically two options. In order for the economy to integrate, that means capital needs to travel across borders more easily. It means it's easier for business people to do business here, there, and everywhere. That means that all the rules and regulations and policies need to become closer together, right? And he says, well, that can happen by there being sort of global norms that all the countries have to conform to. but without any kind of global government. And in fact, because all governments have to conform to these norms, it actually erodes democracy at the local level, because you can't have the choice of your local people to say, well, we want to do this. We want to have a huge welfare state, where actually, because you've got to conform to global norms that allow the flow of capital, you can't have a large welfare state. You need to cut your welfare state. You need to cut public spending. You need to have austerity measures. So it erodes democratic decision-making at the country level. So one option is we carry on in that direction, and we end up in a world where there's global capital flowing freely around the world. States and even our local democracies, including our democracies in Europe, which we think we have democracies, they'll get eroded, and they're already being eroded, but they'll get eroded and more and more and more. And that's one model. And I think if you look at the policies that the G20 is promoting, it's in that direction, really, really clearly, right? They're all now talking about policy coherence, enabling environments. This is all basically about telling the countries of the South, of the developing world, you need to put these policies in place. Doesn't matter what your people want, doesn't matter what your democratic decision-making, this is what you need to do in order for investment, in order for infrastructure investment, and so on. So that's exactly what's being discussed at the G20 now. I don't think that's a good direction to go. I think that's a direction of everything getting worse, of pollution, of climate change, of inequality, of poverty, of de-democratization. That's where that path leads. Now, the only other option, according to Danny Roderick, is actually a democratic world federation, where you have some kind of global government that would actually regulate the market, right? That would regulate the market for the good of the people. And within that, there could be all these welfare policies and things that I mentioned at the beginning. Basically, if we're going to have more and more economic globalization, it's one or the other. There aren't that many. The only other option is to sort of deglobalize. Okay? But the likelihood that we're going to deglobalize for a long time is quite small, because that's where growth comes from. And whilst it would be nice if we could have a degrowth economy or a non-growth economy, we're a long way from that, right? Like, that's something that we'll need to be thinking about and that we need, but it's not something of the short term. So when I look at all these different options, it seems to me that out of them it's clear which is the best option. The best option is to have some kind of global democratic system. Now, a thing of where we think it should be a federal system, right? I mean, there's many of you here from Germany and I think Switzerland, right? The federal structures. So it's not about having a centralized system where the top telling everyone what to do. It's about having the powers that would go up to the higher global level would be those that are needed to talk about global issues, right? So environmental issues, various economic issues, certain issues. And all the other things would be discussed at the country levels or even lower down at the local regional levels. But if we can get democracy at all of these different levels, I think we have a chance to bring about a much more just and fair world. So in terms of actually, well, what do we do? if we believe in this vision, what's the next step forward? So we think that there's a mixture of high-level advocacy work and also promoting the idea and mass mobilizations and so forth. And in terms of the advocacy work, we want to slowly start building the institutional structures which would be necessary to have some kind of global democratic system. So, for example, the International Criminal Court is far from a perfect organization, right? But it's the beginning of a global criminal justice system. Beginnings of ones, right? And the way institutions get built is they get built first a bit wonky, and then they evolve, and then they grow, and then they get better. Right? So it's the beginning of a global criminal justice system. Many of the other NGOs are promoting a United Nations tax body. Right? Some of you might be involved in some of those things. Right? This would be an amazing institution, right? That would enable coordination on tax matters, because tax is not it doesn't seem so interesting, but huge amounts of money is lost from all countries, and particularly developing countries, through all manners of loopholes in the global tax system. And that we need to get all the countries together to redesign a sort of a global functioning tax system. At the moment, those discussions are happening at the OECD. Right? They have a process called the base erosion and profit shifting process. Right? But basically, that's the rich countries getting together, designing what they want to be a global tax system, and then just saying everybody else should implement it. It's not very democratic, right? If we put that at the United Nations, at least everybody's around the table, right? So this is something that we very much support. Once you have some kind of global tax body, that's also a step towards thinking about some kind of global taxes, whether that's a Tobin tax, a carbon tax, or all manner of other kinds of taxes that are possible. And the third most important organization that, or institution that we think that we need would be a parliament, a kind of world parliament. And the step towards that would be a parliamentary assembly at the United Nations. And we think this is, I mean, just think, what do parliaments do in your country? As well as that's obviously where laws are made. It's in parliaments that political parties with different views come together and discuss, right? That's where we have left-right discussions and debates. That's where we have discussions of what are the alternatives of how we want our country to be. If we had a parliament at the United Nations, we could have a left-right discussion at a global level. Think about what that actually might mean. Because without that, we currently essentially have a global right, right? Market, 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 neoliberalism, this is the right. And where's the left? The left is in the World Social Forum or is here. And whilst that's nice to be here, that's not an equivalent, right? There's not an equivalent of power. If the left was in a parliament, a world parliament, with equal position next to the right and able to debate what kind of globalization do we want, that starts changing things. Like that becomes a position of equality to discuss alternatives. So that's one of the reasons that I think a UN Parliamentary Assembly is really, like, to me, this is the cause of the left, right? To be able to enable a left-right discussion at a global level. There are many other reasons as well. So I'm going to hand over to Andreas, who is running the campaign for the United Nations Parliamentary Assembly, and will tell us much, much more.